and welcome to the Offline Gamer, episode number 43. I'm Ray.
And I'm Matt.
And today is November 2019.
It is, just today.
Just today. Every other day is another thing. And I feel like the year has gone quite quickly.
Yeah, it has. It's been an interesting year, hasn't it?
Yeah. We're already staring down Christmas.
Yeah.
And I have no idea what to do for Christmas. I don't know.
It's just going to be a nice time off work, isn't it? And then, yeah. Hopefully get a bit of game time in.
Although I will have to be writing an essay. But at least it's not work in that sense. It's not the day job work.
No.
It's intellectual work. That's what I tell myself at night. So other than that, yes, the nights are getting longer and it's all a bit chilly and rainy here in the UK.
It's always rainy in the UK.
Oh, I know, but I think the last two weekends it's had a nice 24-hour non-stop period of rain, both weekends. So looking forward to this week's 24 hours of rain.
Mm.
But nastier weather outside means more time to spend inside where it's warm playing games.
Oh, games. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now, you've been actually playing way more than I have recently. The trend continues.
Yeah, I've been using a lot of these rainy nights spent at the bar at work playing games with Karen.
Yeah. And we're going to go and have a chat about that a bit later.
We are.
But first, we're going to talk about some news in the local area.
Yes, specifically in the realm of cafes.
Yes, of the board game variety, of course.
Yes, obviously. No, just general cafes.
Just general cafes.
We're going to change. We're changing the tone of the podcast. We're going to be the cafe cast.
Yes, the offline cafe.
Yeah.
I think that could be a viable, you know, side podcast.
Yeah.
Like every 10 minutes a week. Matt and Ray, try a new calf. I'm selling it, aren't I?
Yeah, maybe we should wait till the summer. I don't fancy doing all that travelling over the winter.
But if you do want us to, for some unknown reason, tell you about eateries in Birmingham and the surrounding area, we can. But there's plenty of other people who already do that.
Yeah, and probably do a better job than we could. We're not professional food reviewers, are we? So.
No. Birmingham's very big foodie scene at the moment.
Yes, it is. In fact, I'll be talking about that a bit later when I talk about some of the games I played. So.
Ooh.
Mm.
Frequent listeners will remember Vince of Asgard Games in Warsaw.
Yes.
And we have discussed some of his adventures and plights. And where are we now with new Asgard? Because we're changing, aren't we?
We are. So between the last episode and this one, Vince has actually put his campaign on Kickstarter. And it has successfully funded.
Woohoo! That's very good, I think, considering the ever-growing competition in the realm of board game cafes.
Yeah, I mean, he's quite lucky in that, well.
He networks very well.
He does network very well. Now, he's quite fortunate that there aren't any others around the immediate area. You know, Warsaw's far enough outside of central Birmingham it's a different catchment area. But also, Vince has never been one of these people who is a sort of zero-sum game. It's not for me to win, you have to lose. Vince is very much one of these people who's like, well, the board game community is large. We all need to be doing our part to try and, you know, get people to play the games and we can all get along happily. Yeah. Unfortunately, not everyone in the local area agrees with him on that, but that's a different story.
Mm. I think it probably helped doing a Kickstarter, given that he'd already been a sort of standing member of Warsaw for a while. I don't know whether a completely brand new from nowhere board game cafe would have been able to kickstart into Warsaw.
Yeah.
Possibly because it's a bit, because it is further away from Birmingham.
Getting cafes like that in the smaller towns as opposed to, you know, the big cities. I mean, you go to like London and Birmingham and Bristol, places like that, that have got like a large student population as well. And then you come to somewhere like Warsaw that doesn't really have that. Okay, there's a college in Warsaw, but it's not quite the same as a, you know, large university city, is it?
Yeah.
But he's done well with what he's got, and I think this is a whole new chapter and one that I think is going to do very well.
I think when you are bringing board gaming to towns, I think you're probably going to get a much wider demographic as well. As you say, because if it's not a university town, then you're not necessarily going to get loads of students, but you might get more people with families or more retired people or whatever. And I think that's good to sort of expand the board gaming world as it is now to more people. So, yeah. But well done to Vince.
Well done, but unfortunately this week he had a bit of bad news, didn't he?
Yeah. A bit rubbish.
Yeah, some rapscallions. Is that the word?
That's a word, yeah.
I'll say, okay, but some
scallywags.
That's exactly the word I was just going to use. So some scallywags thought it would be a good idea to break into the new unit and steal all of their power tools.
Yeah. That is unfortunate.
It is quite unfortunate, yeah. But he did say, the police and other local businesses have been wonderful, so a massive thank you to them. So there you go.
And he still managed to do some things. He managed to do some painting, but although that wasn't what he wanted to do
no,
that
he
day.
Said the worst thing about it was I had to paint. I don't know if he doesn't enjoy painting.
I can imagine it might be quite messy and tedious.
Mm.
And if you've got a dodgy shoulder or back or wrist...
That's true.
...then constantly going up and down like this at funny angles...
Yeah.
...might not be your favourite way to spend the day. But it was more a comment on his ability not to get too waylaid by bad news, I suppose.
No. So that's Asgard in Warsaw, and then moving a bit closer to the centre of Birmingham, we have opening in the Custard Factory in the not-too-distant future, the latest branch of Chance Encounters.
Huzzah.
So their first store was in Bristol, and then they opened another one in Cardiff, and then they're coming to Birmingham.
They're slowly working their way up the country.
So you may ask why they've gone from Bristol to Cardiff to Birmingham. Well, there's a very good reason why Birmingham is next, but rather than me explain this, I think we should let the man himself talk to us about it. So a couple of weeks ago, Karen and I went to Digbeth Dining Club, and Chance Encounters were running an event there to publicise the upcoming opening of the Birmingham store. And they had a large selection of games, and we played a few games there, which we'll talk about later. But I said, you know, would you want to come onto the podcast and have a chat with us? And he said, yeah, I'll be happy to. So a couple of days later, we met at a small pub in Harborne near where we work. And we had a good old chat. So without further ado, let's go straight into that. And then we'll see you on the other side.
So we are joined by Steve Coney from Chance Encounters. How are you, mate?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you for taking a bit of time to talk to us.
Not at all.
So we always ask our guests this question to begin with. What is your gaming background? How did you get into tabletop gaming?
So I guess, I mean, a long time ago before tabletop gaming, it was Rummy Cup and Scrabble with my gran.
Really?
Okay. Some very fond memories of getting mercilessly beaten by her, particularly at Rummy Cup. But in terms of the sort of the new wave and my introduction to the, I guess, the current tabletop scene, it's the classic route of Settlers of Catan. My business partner Luke, him and I lived together in Moseley about 6 years ago, and we went on holiday to a friend's house in Salcombe, and he brought a copy of Settlers of Catan along.
Yep.
took me two games of being furious and saying this is not fun. This is partly far too many rules because at the time that was all I'd really seen of board games. Yeah. And a couple more games and I was like, what the heck? Right, I'm in. So yeah, Catan, as they say, the gateway drug into a wider, more expensive and expansive hobby.
Expensive is the word, isn't it?
It certainly is.
Oh, so what's your personal collection looking like at the moment?
My personal collection, I would say, is streamlined. I give a lot of stuff to the cafe, and I don't know, I tend to really only buy stuff that I think is going to get played like relentlessly. So yeah. Recent purchases, Monikers,
yep.
Pitch Deck. I really like Alex Haig's games. And I've got The Mind recently, because that's just one that you can whap out again.
That's amazing.
Talking about portable games,
yep.
Take it anywhere and sit in silence with your friends. Great.
Yeah. All just shiftily looking at each other.
Yeah, exactly. Other recent purchases. Celestia. Celestia's another one.
Oh yeah.
It's become a bit of a family favourite in the county household. Bought it for my mum for Christmas, and it's one that we play a lot. So I'd say I've probably got like 30-40 games at home.
Okay.
But they tend to be on the sort of the shorter party end of the spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuff that I think
the heavy stuff is all in there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm spoiled really, because I have the option to go and pinch a game from the cafe for a week.
Yeah.
Which reduces my gaming overhead somewhat.
Are you from this area originally?
No, so from Gloucestershire.
Okay.
So Luke and I, my business partner, both grew up together in the Sticks in the Cotswolds. Went up north for uni, came back down for masters. So
yeah.
I know Birmingham. He spent a lot more time here than me. He was here for 9 years doing a PhD. So
wow.
He knows a lot. Yeah, generally knows Birmingham a lot better than me. But no, I'm a Midlands boy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a few years ago, you and Luke,
yep.
Decided that you wanted to open a board game.
Yeah, what a stupid idea that was.
So initially, what brought that about?
So I guess, you know, that year where we were living together in Moseley, and he was gradually poking me to play progressively more complicated board games, he was simultaneously talking about this kind of growing model for a hospitality venue that used board games as a centrepiece. And so during that year we went and visited a few around the UK that were open at the time, and we thought we could do it better. We thought it wasn't quite what we wanted from a cafe, but it still scratched the itch that we wanted, which was that you could go there and play a £60 game and not drop £60 on it. Decide if you like it and then come back and buy it if you did.
Yeah.
So we'd seen a few ventures in the UK, and we thought, you know, coming to the end of our postgraduate studies, we were looking at what else we could be doing. A very fortunate circumstance where a friend of ours that we grew up with as well had a very successful, or at the time, you know, very young but successful furniture business.
Okay.
And he'd been playing games with us as well. Similarly, got hooked on Catan on the same holiday in Solcombe and said, guys, you should do it. Here's 30 grand, which is, you know, extraordinary privilege to have at that time. So it was a combination of right place, right time, market was right. There's clearly board game cafes are popping up seemingly monthly, but we still thought we could have our own spin on it.
Yeah.
So we looked around in Birmingham. It's an expensive place to run a business and to open a business. Second city and all of that, it's a lot more competitive for sites than the likes of Bristol, although Bristol has now got even crazier. But yeah, so we found a place in Bristol, moved down, and the rest is history.
So that was just purely based on the cost, or would you think Bristol was...
No, to be fair, we knew it was right for Bristol.
Yeah.
It felt like an absolute no-brainer that Bristol should have one. It's a experimental city. It's, you know, it's young. There's a lot of universities. There's also a lot of the kind of well-heeled yuppie crowd, which is a big fans of our cafe.
Cool.
Second one, yeah, we crossed the bridge into Rugby Heartlands. So that was about a year ago to the day that we opened the doors, but probably 2 years ago that we actually started planning it. And that was probably about 2 years after after Bristol opened. We stopped working in there full time, like we had been, the three of us directors, because it was you know, sales was sufficiently good that we could afford to put management in place and think, like, cool, this is working. Like, let's grow it. And again, we looked around at a lot of places. Birmingham was still on our radar. Same problems persisted. It was just ludicrously expensive. We were looking in the wrong places, realistically. We were looking at Brindley Place and all these sort of chain hotspots and thinking, why can't you get somewhere for less than 150 grand a year rent when, like, just a lot more than we paid in Bristol. And Cardiff, again, another massive city that didn't have a board game cafe. Had a good board gaming scene through the likes of Rules of Play, Firestorm, and lots of meetup groups, and we just thought, this is close, it's manageable from Bristol. It's a cool city. It's got a similar sort of crowd, big uni. Again, well-heeled yuppie crowd. I consider myself in that group, so I'm not using that, aspersions. So yeah, Cardiff, that was probably about 2 years ago to the day that we started planning it, and a year ago to the day that we got open.
Okay. And at that point, did you immediately start thinking, right, Birmingham's next?
Yeah, I think we probably did, actually. It was about 3 months after we opened that I came up here for the first time. No, a month after we opened in Cardiff that I came up here, and a lead through some friends of ours that run Loading Bar, which is like a chain of sort of video game and board game bars in London. A chain, a group. And I met him for a beer in London. He said, oh, we're looking at this site in the Custom Factory in Birmingham. And I was like, ears pricked up. Like, I remember the Custom Factory. Any chance, like, are you up for giving us an intro to Custom Factory folks? And he was like, yeah, I'll chat to the board, see what they think. And even though we both do tabletop, we're quite similar characters, and we thought it could work next to each other, so he was like, yeah, cool, come and have a look at the site next to us. For whatever reason, it all fell through with them, but their intro meant that we had a foot in the door with Custom Factory, which is a, you know, as you know, legendary iconic site in Birmingham, and it was not Brindley Place prices. So it ticked the box for so many reasons that, you know, we committed to Birmingham more quickly after Cardiff launched than we probably would have with any other site, but we just saw it and we were like, this is gonna work. This is where we need to be.
So I won't say worried is a term. Are you, because Wayland's Forge is literally around the corner. Do you think that's gonna help you or hinder you?
I think it's good for everyone. It's good for everyone to have board game businesses in the same proximity. We serve very different markets. We don't sell a lot of games. And we don't touch the whole collectibles, miniatures.
Yeah, they have a lot of
wargaming,
you know, and things there, don't
they? And I think that's where, you know, with the friendly local game stores and stuff, that's where it gets really competitive. Like, if we opened and we were doing CCGs, it would get really ratty. But we are just here banging the board game drum, but on a much more casual end of the spectrum, which, if we do our thing and we introduce some people from the world of Monopoly, Cluedo, etc. into the broader hobby, then it's better for them than same with Meeple Mayhem. Like, I think there's another board game cafe in Birmingham already, but it's a massive city, and it's plenty big enough for the two of us, and, you know, they are on the casual end of the spectrum, but I still think, you know, Bristol, we got two other cafes and all three of us thrive.
Cool.
Cardiff, you know, there's Firestorm doing the wargaming CCG side of things, and we do what we do. I just think, provided we're not literally going for the same folks,
yeah,
it's good for everyone.
Yeah, I think in general the community are just all happy to have someone else around, you know.
And I
know a few people who've run stores over the years, or I'm quite good friends with Vince, who runs Asgard Games in Warsaw, which is where I'm from. Is about a half hour drive from here, and he's moving from just being a friendly local gaming store into a big cafe.
Nice.
So he's doing something similar to how you're going to be doing. So, and I think he said to me, you know, there's enough room in this community for everyone. Everyone's very welcoming, and
it's interesting to see, like, how we're quite interested to see how small in terms of a population can sustain a war game cafe. It's the kind of thing we go back and forth on a lot, because, you know, like I say, Luke and I grew up in Cheltenham, and I don't think it's right now. That's about 120,000 people. Like, it's like a kind of a constant chat is like, what's the smallest size town or city that can support it?
Yeah.
And we're right now we're going upwards in population, but at some point, you know, touch wood, if we can march around the UK, then maybe then we can start looking at these smaller cities and how do you create like a little community hub that is also a board game cafe, and then, but what does that look like when it's serving 50,000 people as opposed to 2 million? Like, it's very different to how we're approaching, obviously, a 4,000 square foot site and custom factory. But like, best of luck. And I think Warsaw is, again, all these cities around they're massive, really. Like, in the grand scheme of things, like, they are huge compared to like the likes of Cheltenham and stuff.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk crowdfunding. So the first first cafe you went on Kickstarter.
That's right.
Yep. Met your funding goal.
Yes.
What did you learn from that experience? If you were to do that Kickstarter again now, what would you have done differently? What advice would you give to someone who was looking at running a Kickstarter to start their own gaming cafe?
Good question. What have we learned from it? Don't underestimate the amount of... quite rightly, people put money towards a project that you fulfill. And I think what we maybe got it wrong was that you can underestimate the amount of investment they actually have emotionally in it after the date has passed, the funding goal has been reached. And I think with board games and board game cafes that fund on there can be a tendency to be like, yay, we hit our goal, cool, we're going to go do the thing.
Yeah.
But it's easy to forget that there's hundreds of people behind the money being like, cool, let me know exactly, you know, what colour paint you're choosing on the walls.
Yeah.
And that they're totally entitled to want that kind of...
They feel like they're part of the business.
Mm, as they should. But the ongoing energy required to keep them sustained with information and updates is something that you don't think of when you're thinking about hit the target, cool, go and take the money and use it to build the cafe. So, yeah, like, for sure, don't neglect the post-campaign phase.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we're lucky. We didn't piss off our backers, but it's quite easy to, I'm sure.
Oh, I back a lot of Kickstarters, and I see a lot of angry comments.
Yeah.
You said you were going to post an update on Monday. Yeah. It's now Tuesday, and you haven't posted it yet.
Yeah. And, like, you know, at the end of the day, you went on Kickstarter for a reason, which is you wanted to build a community and get money. And if you take the money and neglect the community, then...
Yeah, people feel ripped off, not, and
yeah, for sure. So that's definitely a big lesson for us. And to someone doing it again, you know, with board game cafes, I worry that actually it just doesn't work anymore. I've seen a lot of campaigns like that. The amount board game cafes are funding on Kickstarter has just been dropping and dropping and dropping.
Yeah.
Like Drafts in London were like the 20 grand mark. We hit about 13, and that was 5 years ago, 4 years ago. And I've seen some underfunded campaigns, and it just feels like almost like the appetite is waning a little bit for venue-based Kickstarters. I don't know what it is, but the goals are a lot more modest now. It could just be in general because Kickstarter is just swamped with board games.
I mean, there is that. If you're gonna get a, you know, if you're going to crowdfund, people don't use Indiegogo or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's just going to be Kickstarter because that's where the audience is.
There's almost, yeah, I don't know, there's almost an argument for it because, like, you know, like, bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Like, you know, Indiegogo might not have the same concentration of board gamers, but if you can get all the money that you take on it, you need every penny you're going to get for your board game cafe venture. So setting, like, being like, yeah, we're going to do 15K, like, with no run-up, and then... not is like crushing, whereas saying we're gonna do 50k and getting 4 grand of it, like, at least you've still got, you're in with a chance of delivering.
Did you do much promo before the campaign launched?
Didn't we?
I'm gonna assume that's a no then if you can't remember.
Do you know what? I don't know that we really did, and that's actually something that you just can't do now. Like, we kind of sleptwalked into it. In fact, no, you know what? We did a lot of PR around the launch of the Kickstarter. We didn't build a big community beforehand. But I guess our big PR launch was probably 2 weeks before the campaign. We got a big hit in Bristol Post.
That's good.
So yeah, you know, it's like my mind is so muddled thinking back to that 5 years ago or something. I'm sure we did. We definitely, you know, we went to like Area 51 and the gaming meetups and stuff and said, hey, we're coming.
Yeah.
But comparatively, like, nowadays, like, people launch on Kickstarter with a Twitter following of 4,000 like 10k on Instagram and stuff, and we were not that, like, we're not even that now.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were probably we were still didn't really know what the community and industry was like at that point. We were just kind of muddling our way through.
That's fair. I mean, everyone's got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
So the key to a successful campaign, in my view, partly is to get someone's attention. So the name usually does that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the name.
Yeah.
Who came up with that?
Oh, disputed territory. No, I'm going to, you know, after years of saying it's 50-50, Luke and I'm going to doff my cap and say it's more like 70-30 in Luke's favour.
Okay.
It was definitely, whiskey was definitely involved. Sitting in the garden in our house in Moseley was definitely the venue. But we went through all of the tabletop derivatives, like, let's call it the boardroom, let's call it da-da-da. Like, we were scraping the barrel for a while, and then my story is that Luke said chance encounters, and I punned it up, but he reckons he'd punned it up too, so, you know, it's dangerous ground.
Yeah.
But it's Luke and I.
Well, I love a good pun anyway, so
it's
a
good one, right? It's a good one. It took us a little while. So Alex, that I mentioned, our first investor, the friend investor,
yeah,
wasn't keen on it. Said it was too wordy. Which, he's got a point. You have to enunciate it, otherwise it sounds a little bit like a dating website, and it makes a lot more sense written down than it does spoken.
True,
but it is eye catching, and puns ain't going anywhere. People love that stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, my workmates may disagree with you there, but okay. I like puns anyway.
Right. They're getting pun wary. Yeah. Weary, are they?
They are.
Are you an aggressive punner?
Would you say I'm an aggressive punner?
Very.
Okay. Yes. There you go.
Fair enough.
So you've been doing a bit of work in the local Birmingham board game scene to try and obviously promote the upcoming opening of the Birmingham store. Obviously the event we saw you at was on a couple of days ago. We saw you at the Digbeth Dining Club, so let's talk about that first, because we were there. How did you find that one?
I thought it was really positive. Yeah, it's Digbeth Dining Club is a venue that's full of our sort of customers, which are the sort of, yeah, we like board games, we play them once a year, but I don't really know there's a lot beyond that.
Yeah.
And that's like the most fertile ground for us to take people on that journey. So, you know, it wasn't a lot of complicated games being played. But there were a lot of people having that sort of, like, Scrabble to Double moment,
yeah,
where, like, it's just, even the, you know, Double, maybe not the best example, but it's something that isn't your classic traditional family game. It's something slightly beyond it.
But it's easy enough for them to find something to grab onto and understand. Yeah.
And it's, you know, there's a lot of unexpected types on Sunday where you're like, you know the nature of that room that we were in. Most people come through with their fried chicken or something. But the amount of people that came through with their fried chicken in hand, they were like, oh, what's this?
Yeah.
And then we got them playing games. It's like super encouraging because, like I say, that's what we exist to do, is to take people that don't think they're board gamers. They wouldn't say, I'm a board gamer.
Yeah.
Then you put the right game in front of them and they're like, oh, okay, I love this.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that, you know, Digbeth Dining Club said the vibe was really, really good. They invited us back to do.
Oh, they did. Okay.
Every Sunday forever, if we could stop it, but we can't. We can't. So we're gonna do it. We're gonna do a few more of them before we launch. And I think generally, like, the best way for us of getting the word out before we launch is to go and just do our thing in venues where we know our customers hang out.
Yeah.
So we've got, you know, we did Paper Duck in Harborne, beautiful craft beer bar. Tomorrow night we're doing 1,000 Trades Jewelry Quarter. So that's, you know, just won like best bar in the UK in the Observer Food Monthly Awards or something. So again, it's like, it's a cool little neighbourhood bar, not pretentious, just full of like people that like a drink and like to chat. Thursday at the Old Crown, Digbeth. Again, just a legendary pub in Birmingham.
Yeah.
So yeah, all these places have been super receptive to it, which isn't just our approach. Like, they get that board games are cool and like a good way of bringing people in and locking them.
Board games are cool.
Board games are cool. Board games are cool. They're just not all of it. that's, we've got plans to do a lot more of that kind of stuff.
Okay. Cool. So I was going to ask you about your sort of demographic you noticed when you opened the first cafe. Was it what you expected, or did you find a lot of types of people coming in and playing games that you just didn't expect?
We broadly knew that we were going to aim it at people like ourselves. I wasn't prepared necessarily for... I didn't think we'd be as family-friendly as we are. Mm-hmm. That sounds weird because board games are a very family-oriented thing, but maybe we were thinking it was going to be more like... No, I don't, you know what, I'm not quite sure about that. No. Families weren't too unexpected. We thought we'd get more students than we do.
Okay.
Everyone, you know, even when I talk to my family and my uncles and stuff, they're like, oh yeah, Birmingham will work because there's loads of students there. And I'm like, yeah, but it will work, but it's not because of the students actually. It's because of the 25 to 45 year old kind of got a bit more spending power. And you know, the millennial crowd is for sure really good for us because myself included, we're the ones having like back to tactile kind of moment where we're like, we had that split, we straddled the tactile and the information era. Do you know what I mean? Like, some of my friends that are buying a couple of records here and there are also the ones buying board games and things like that. But no, you know, our core crowd is young professionals and young families.
Okay. I'm always interested in how people who run shops and cafes, how they go around. Say a family walks in and their only experience of war games is, you know, the usual sort of stuff that people play at Christmas. How do you then take that person and then find a game that will help them get into the hobby?
It's a good question because I think that this is where a lot of board gaming venues, shops, whatever go wrong. Is that first thing we do is give them what they want.
Yeah.
Like if they come in and they say, I want to play Scrabble or Monopoly, you say, cool, here's Scrabble and Monopoly. Like the worst thing at that point you can do is to say, haha, no, you don't want to play Scrabble.
Yeah.
You want to play da 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 da. Because no one likes being told what they want to do. So we give them what they want first. They got 4 hours, so we know they're going to finish Scrabble Monopoly, unless they're having a particularly Monopoly game of Monopoly. They're going to finish
when
Monopoly.
They're not playing it right.
They're going to finish Monopoly in an hour and a half. And at that point, spirits are high or possibly really low because it's Monopoly. You then say, cool, you've got another couple of hours. What do you fancy next? If you like Monopoly, and you always anchor it to stuff they've just experienced. Yeah. So like, if you like Monopoly, if you like a little bit of backstabbing, then here is a bunch of games around backstabbing. If you like the kind of resource management aspect, then you kind of take something that they're familiar with, tie it to something else, and obviously always within the bounds of like, this has got to be teachable in 5-10 minutes tops. Yeah. No glaze on the eyes, and then get them going. But you know, it's not to say that, you know, you don't. If someone comes in, it's more off. The more difficult one is when they don't know what they want.
Yeah.
You know, if they come in and they say, I've played Monopoly, I didn't like it. Play Scrabble, not my thing. In that case, it's about like rapid fire elevator pitches for a couple of really easy games. You know, like the gateway crack is like the doubles thing. You know, do you like snap on steroids, here you go. Do you like timeline is another one, which is like if you just don't know what you want, but you like a trivia game, but you don't want to play Trivia Pursuit, you know, take the most concise, condensed version of that form, stick it in front of them, teach them 30 seconds, and then let them go. But yeah, I think the general rule is give them what they want first, then try and expand their mind.
Yeah.
And then when you're expanding their minds, always bring it back to the place of familiarity.
Yeah. Do you find the theme is important as well? I mean, I'd imagine if someone likes trains, for example, then you know exactly what game to pitch at them.
Yeah. The theme and, you know, a couple of quick questions like, do you want something that's talky? Do you want something that's stinky? Do you want something that's fluffy? Like, really, like, it's kind of just like childish words. Get to the core of like what they're there for.
Yeah.
Are they there to sit and look at their hands, as in not there physically, their hands, you know?
I know what you mean.
For an hour or so, and then mentally concoct a strategy to beat up their friends, or are they there to verbally abuse them? In which case, there's one game which no one likes, but you can give them that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So on a similar note, you obviously as a business owner have to employ people.
Mm.
How do you decide whether, when you're interviewing someone, how do you know that that person is going to be good at explaining games to people? I guess because obviously that's the core part of the job.
Very difficult higher. Very difficult. It's a funny little Venn diagram you have to find, which is knows games, is passionate about board games, is passionate about engaging with people, has some hospitality experience, so understands the stresses and strains of a very physical job. And you know, adding must be able to work evenings and weekends.
Oh yeah,
it's really difficult, to be honest with you. And I think we've got a few filtering mechanisms. Smiley people that can talk about games are a great start. And we kind of do like we always do like a bit of role play in an interview. So like Luke and I are very good at double acting it. Be like, all right, so I'm now we're pissed up pair of lads just come up from Digbeth Dining Club. Like all I've played is like Jenga.
Yeah,
I'm like really leery right now. Like, and you put him in that situation, and then we stick to our characters, and we're like, I recommend a game, and we're like, no, it sounds rubbish. So like, a lot of it is how they deal with what can be really tricky customers. But it's something I do worry about. You know, as we grow and grow and grow, is that like if I'm less involved with that initial interview process.
Yeah.
How do we always make sure that they're on point, because it is the most important role in the cafe for sure.
Yeah,
it's always the one where, you know, right now we've still got 2 shifts a week for gurus, which we're just struggling with because we can't find everyone we want for that role. And I think it is a certain amount of it is we will wait until we're open, and we always do well hiring customers because if they come in already as customers, chances are they love the concept, they get it, they love games, da 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 da. But, you know, the passion for the games is first and foremost. The ability to deal with people is second. But almost equally
almost,
important.
Yeah, 50-50 split kind of thing.
And then hospital experience, and nice to have, but almost a necessary as well. Yeah, all I can say at the moment while we're a small business, is it's a chemistry thing with the owners and the member of staff. Is like, do I think you'd represent us well? And that doesn't scale super well, but for the time being, it works.
Yeah. So you've moved back up here.
Yeah.
So you're going to be running the Birmingham store.
Ish.
Okay.
We've got a fantastic management team already lined up for Birmingham. It's an instant moment.
That's good.
The quality of applications has been ridiculous in Birmingham for management. So I will be here. For at least the first 9 months of Birmingham being open, but I'm not going to be micromanaging the staff. You know, we are still building every site with one eye on the next.
Yeah.
Until we screw one up, basically. So I don't want to build a business around myself in Birmingham.
Yeah.
I want someone else that is here for the long, long run to be invested.
Yeah, you're thinking long term.
Yeah, and we're lucky enough to have in every city amazing people that are more committed to that city than I am. When I'm just missing nomad that goes around sticking a chance account that's where you're not expecting it.
That's fair enough.
I think it's important. Like I said, we're a small business. The 3 owners are still very visible.
Mm-hmm.
We're not like corporate that you speak to on email.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
We're always knocking around playing games, drinking the bar dry. Interviewing people. No, that's just me.
So, what sort of timescales are people looking at for the Birmingham branch to open?
2 weeks on Saturday is a soft launch, friends and family.
So that'll be the what?
9th of November.
Okay.
And then the following Thursday, 14th. I think 14th to the public.
Touch wood.
Yes, I'm always. Honestly, I've touched wood. Like every day for the last month, just being like, whenever I talk about the cafe, I'm just like, touch wood, because this is a bit different for us this time. We have a project manager who's another friend of ours from home, who's taking the vast majority of the stress of the contractors and the build away from me. But that means, to a degree, I don't know always what's going on and what the problems are. But I just trust that it's going to happen on the 9th of November, and I work on everything around the peripheries. We haven't committed to a date publicly, because that's probably another thing, actually, coming back to your first question about Kickstarter, is don't commit to a date unless you definitely know you can commit to it.
Yeah.
Because we moved our Bristol launch date like 4 times, and by the 4th time people were just like, just don't say a date. Just honestly, just don't say a date. Just tell us the day before.
Yeah.
Because it's very easy to be like,
there will be people there.
Yeah.
You'll be okay.
Yeah. I'm a wild optimist. And that was reflected in our first Kickstarter goal. Dates.
Okay. A lot of people make that mistake though, don't they? They go way too optimistic.
Yeah.
Especially with board games, and it's like you have printing problems, and then you have Chinese New Year, and there's all these delays that people don't realise.
And you've just got that sort of killer month period where it's all on a boat.
Yeah.
Nothing you can do there. Like, yeah.
So if people want to get in touch with you guys and find out more about you, where should they go?
So Facebook, Chance Encounters Birmingham. On Twitter, we're Chance Counters, because of that pesky character in it. Instagram, Chance Encounters. Or find us on the website. All of the digital channels we are in, except for LinkedIn. Don't need that.
No. Cool. Well, thanks very much, Mike, for spending a bit of time with us this evening.
Thanks for
having me. Really appreciate it.
Not at all.
And wish you all the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
I think, actually, Asgard and Chance Encounters are going to open at a very similar time.
Yeah.
So, but I backed Asgard on Kickstarter. So, I think... You backed it as well, didn't you?
I think so.
Yeah, you did. Because Vince said thank you. So here's me passing on my thanks to you from Vince.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome.
I think he might be running a special sort of opening party for the Kickstarter backers. So
okay,
that should be nice.
I only backed it sort of the basic level. Oh no, here it is.
Was it like £25 you backed?
Funded and the future. Yeah, it was the 2 free Pete's tokens. Get in.
I think I backed at the next level up above that. I'm closer to it than you are, so that just sort of makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, who knows if I'll actually get to use any of my stuff, but
I'll make sure you do.
Okay. It was more sort of because we know Vince and he's a nice chap and
yeah. Got to support local businesses as well.
Yes, the entrepreneurial spirit of it all.
Indeed.
Yes.
So, what we've been playing and buying since last time. So the first thing on my list is something that actually I haven't played. Technically, you have played.
Yes. Which is a good reminder because my playing list is quite sparse.
Yes.
Otherwise.
So you played this with Karen and Paul from work.
Yes.
And I was the story master in...
The Story Master's Tales of Weirding Woods.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And I was a pirate.
You were a pirate. I can't remember what the other guys were.
I think Paul was a rogue...
No, Paul's normally
Karen
a wizard.
Was a rogue.
Yeah, Karen was a rogue. Paul was a wizard or a mage or whatever it is in Weirding Woods. So I've obviously got my perspective as a storyteller, but I'm interested to hear what you thought of it as a player, first of all.
I quite liked it. I think it's a really good kind of RPG light.
Mm.
That is a really good introduction for people who maybe haven't done RPG stuff before, because there's a bit of board work and board creation kind of, and there's moving around and there's some dice rolling, but there's also sort of you interact with the story master and to make decisions. And although the decisions are sort of, you know, they're limited.
Yeah.
Like you have one, two, or A, B, or C, pick one. And as much as I kept trying to convince you to let me save the dragon and make it my friend, that wasn't in the book, so we couldn't do it. But I was like, damn you.
It was the mission. The mission was to kill the dragon.
Yeah, but I didn't know from the title of the mission that we were going to kill the dragon. I was just like, oh, it involves dragons. Cool, let's make friends with dragons. But then... it was actually, we have to find this dragon and kill it. But we didn't find that out until after we started.
Yeah.
The mish. The quest. I suppose they're called quests in RPGs.
I suppose they are, yes.
We didn't succeed in our quest. I think we were just particularly unlucky at gathering treasury type things.
Yeah, I think the cards with like the marketplaces on didn't come out or came out quite late.
Yeah. Like, we found the alchemist, so we could keep going back and buying health potions, but we were all still, I think we were still all just on like the basic strength, attack, health.
Yeah, I don't think any of you would really like, well, there's not leveling up, but you hadn't got any buffs or anything, really.
No, I think Paul started with one, but then he lost it because of one of the encounters, and he got a really bad roll, which meant he lost his like treasure thing, and because he only had one, that was it. And we also found, because there's two different types of fighting.
Yeah, magical or like physical strength.
Yeah, and there were a lot of physical ones that came out and not a lot of magic ones.
No.
And Paul was a lot stronger with magic, but I, like, me and Karen were a bit stronger with the physical type of thing. So I think Paul kind of got stuck a couple of times because he couldn't defeat something that we needed to defeat to keep building the board.
Yeah.
And then one of me or Karen had to kind of divert from where we were to sort of walk over and meet up and go back and try and bash the thing that we need to bash.
Yeah. I mean, the guy who made the game does say you can stack the deck, so I think for the next time we play, I may do that. I may subtly put a few things up towards the top just to make the game a bit more, I wouldn't say easy, but just to level it out a little bit.
Yeah, because the pirate starts off with quite a lot of money.
Mm.
I think he starts off with like 50 gold. And you can find an extra 100 or 200 gold if you pull this a specific location, which is where the pirate knows there's some buried treasure.
Yeah.
But we didn't pull that card, even though we nearly filled up the whole table with cards. And I was like, why is it the last card? It's always the last card. But yeah, I found it quite fun. I don't know whether I would want to play the same quest again just to be like, I've done it now.
No,
or
I think...
I'd want to just blaze through all of them and then come back to things that we didn't like win.
Yeah, I
later.
Think that's probably the best way to do it. I mean, my perspective is obviously different in that I was effectively DMing it, although it's not because I've got a very specific framework of things to work in. So essentially, as the DM or the story master, you reveal the cards as the players explore, and then when they move into an area, each card has got a number on. You go to that number in the book and read out the text. Now, obviously, there's an element of storytelling. You can improvise a little bit, but not really with the options unless you want to start making up your own adventures.
Yeah.
How did you feel my storytelling was? Did I, you know, keep you engaged? Were my voices any good?
Yeah. I think you did very well.
Oh, thanks.
You dealt very well with my insistence of trying to befriend the dragon, which was not in the book, when you were being the dragon and sort of like the random roles of like whether or not you liked us.
Oh, yes. And then if I did like you, I put you on my back and flew around with you for a bit.
Yeah. Whereas you didn't like me, so you were just like, no, I don't think we'll be doing that. Stinky pirates. And so on. But yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's very choose your own adventurous in that it's basically go to a page, choose an option, do the outcome. I think one of the limitations of the format is after a few games, once you know what all the options are, it'd be quite easy for you to choose the right thing.
Mm.
Like the first time you choose an option, you don't know what it's going to do. But then if you keep going back to the same location, you'll then say, well, I'm obviously not going to do that. I'm going to do this option because this option is always going to get me gold or whatever.
Mm.
One of the cards I found interesting was the, what was his name? Like the Death Knight thing.
Oh, yeah.
Who, if you choose the wrong option, can either kill you or turn you evil.
Which ends the game anyway.
Yeah, effectively. Well, it means that one of you is playing against the others then.
Yes. But me and Paul both went onto the tile at the same time.
Yeah.
And we both chose the same option, and then you revealed that we were evil, and we thought, well, it's possibly not a fair 2v1 on Karen. So maybe let's
I mean, if you'd have killed her, then you two would have won, I guess. But
yeah.
But it was also very nice that you didn't want to do that.
At that point, we were all the way down the bottom of the map, she was all the way up the top of the map, so I'm like, oh, can I really be bothered to, like, chase her around the map? No, I can't. Let's just redo and hide in the bushes or something till he goes away.
One of the mechanics I did like was the luck or the fate. Was it the fate mechanic it was called? Where you had to roll your fate. But you start off with like 4, and then to successfully win you need to roll your fate or under. So if you roll a 1, 2, 3, or 4, but every time you use it, it goes down by 1. So you effectively become less lucky as the game goes on.
Yeah.
And I quite like that as a mechanic.
I thought it was quite good.
Yeah.
Because it makes it a bit more tense every time you have to do it.
Okay, so we'll definitely have to schedule another session of that and choose a different adventure.
Indeed.
So next up for me is a bunch of games I've played with Karen. So most of these are small games, some 2-player, some 4-player that we played with 2 people. First one is a game I've talked about before, and it's a small card game I backed on Kickstarter ages ago. In fact, on BGG it's got a date of 2015, so it must have been one of the very first things I ever backed. And that's a small card game called Relative Paradox, which is describes itself as the tabletop time travel game. I can't remember how much I've talked about it before, but basically it's a deck of cards. You split the deck into piles, but each pile has got a paradox in it. And what you're doing is you're drafting cards. There's like a marketplace around the outside of the decks that have different historical figures or historical events. And each of the cards has got a little symbol in the corner. And what you're trying to do is basically create pairs of historical events. So you're trying to get William Shakespeare with Romeo and Juliet, for example. And so all those make sense. But in each of the decks, when you reveal a paradox in one of the spaces in the marketplace, that space can no longer be used. But the paradox allows you to make a pair of 2 things that wouldn't normally be paired together.
Yeah.
As if there was like a time travel paradox. So it's quite a simple, well, it's a very simple like matching game, but there's an element of drafting. And sometimes it's, you know, I don't need this card, but I remember that they picked up, one of the other players picked up a different card that would make a pair with this. So I'm going to take this card before they can make the pair.
Yeah.
So, yeah, quite simple, but I enjoy it. And it's certainly the type of game that I could just, you know, take with me and play in a hotel room or something like that. So, yeah, Relative Paradox.
See, that sounds really familiar. And I'm sure we saw this at the first UKG we went to.
No, we've never seen this. It's an American game, so it's...
Oh, okay.
We've never seen it at UKG.
Oh, fair enough.
I wonder what you're... Yeah,
Maybe I'm remembering... I can't remember what it's called now. The little game, I think it's from a Polish company. And it was the guys who also published Superhot.
Oh, you're thinking Multi-Universum, aren't you?
Yes, that's the one.
Yes, I've got that.
Yes, that's what it was. It was giving me echoes.
Yeah, that's all about opening portals to parallel universes.
Yeah.
So after that, we played a game which I was quite eager to play, actually, and that was Overworld from Magic Meeple Games. Magic Meeple Games, of course, being the people who produced Fire of Eidolon, one of my favourite games of the last few years. So, it's set in the same universe, same art style, like that sort of 16-bit thing, and the box is the same, you know, it looks like a Super Nintendo game. Very different mechanically. So this is a competitive game where what you're doing is you're all exploring like a land. And the game is made up of all these tiles that interlock with each other. So what you're normally doing is you're locking tiles together, forming like regions of the same type of thing and putting your little meeples and things that you've got inside them. But eventually you'll get to a situation where someone has made has put a number of tiles together in a certain way, which means that there's a gap in the middle of them that won't take any tiles because of the way they're oriented or whatever. You just can't fit anything in there. So when that happens, you put a dungeon door inside it, and they say in the game a dungeon's been discovered. And then what you do is, to work out what colour door goes in there, which player's door goes in there, you look at the areas that are surrounding this gap and add up all of the meeples that people have put in them. So, for example, if there's like two sections of one section of green with like three of your meeples in, and another section with two of your opponents in, then you've got more meeples around it. So you claim that dungeon door. So the game keeps going like that, where people are putting these interlocking tiles down, discovering dungeons and putting their doors in. And then the way the scoring works at the end, the points are given based on how far away your dungeon doors are from each other. So as the map expands, it's in your best interests to discover dungeons that are further away, because you'll eventually have three dungeon doors down, and then you have to count the number of squares it takes you to get between them. And that's your points. So effectively, the more you've explored, the wider the gap between your dungeon doors, the more points you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Good. So that's the game. I really enjoyed it. It took a bit more to get into than Fire of Eidolon did, because obviously the mechanics of Fire of Eidolon are very similar to a lot of other games. You know, dungeon crawling, fighting, things like that. Well, this was quite a bit different, but I really enjoyed this. I wouldn't say I enjoyed it as much as Fire of Eidolon, but it was almost as good, in my view.
Oh, that's high praise.
It is, and I think you'll like it. I really do. I think it's really enjoyable. And obviously, I only played it with two players. I think with three or four, it will get a lot more interesting, because there'll be a lot more competition for the gaps in the board. So yeah, that's Overworld. Very, very recommended.
Sounds very fun.
Yeah. So next up is the aforementioned trip to Digbeth Dining Club, where we not only had lovely food. I can't remember what I had, actually. What did I have?
You definitely sent me a picture of something.
Disco someone or other. Hang on, I'm going to look that up.
Was it Disco Fries?
Disco Fries, that was it. Yeah. I mean, the store looked great because it was all like neon light lit and everything like that. So, and then the dishes were all like puns on disco things. So, I mean, I've got to be honest, it was the puns that got me.
It was the puns that drew you in.
It was. The puns drew me in, but the food kept me.
Always the way.
Yes. So they have... so this is what I had. The Jerking My Way Back to You.
Ho, ho, ho.
But they also had the Keema Chameleon.
Mm-hmm.
Cheesy Wonder.
Yep.
Rock the Gravy Boat. And Satay Night Fever.
Oh, gosh. yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think that's all we can say.
Okay. So we sat down and started playing some games. So I actually bought some of my own games with me, but we ended up playing quite a few from the Chance Encounters selection. So first up, we played Unstable Unicorns. Nice, simple card game, very similar to Exploding Kittens. Speaking of Exploding Kittens, the next game we played was Bears vs. Babies, which is a game by the same people. Now, I'd seen this but never played it, so I was a bit intrigued as to what it was all about, and it's very, very odd. Very odd.
Mm.
You are drawing cards from some decks to enable you to build monsters, and so you get a head, and then you put a body on, and some of them you can put arms and legs on, which give them extra bonuses to attacks and things like that. And then... if you draw babies, there's three types of baby. You've got air, sea, and land. And they're horrible, horrible little babies.
Hmm.
And then you attack them. And when you attack, all of one type of monster will attack them. So if you attack land babies, then everyone who's got a land baby will attack the babies. Everyone who's got a land monster, all of their land monsters will attack the babies, and then the player who's got the highest attack is the winner, basically.
Right.
But you end up with some very, very odd combinations of monsters. For example, I had a shark carrying a knife cat, which was just like it had a cat with a knife strapped to the front of it, who sucks at dancing.
I see.
And there was also a bald eagle armed with knives and burritos on cool cyborg legs.
Yes.
So it was certainly very strange.
Mm.
If you like exploding kittens, you'll probably like this. Personally, I thought it was all right, but not a great deal of depth. And would I play it again? Yes, if someone put it in front of me, but it's certainly not something I'd go out of my way to play.
Fair enough. I think that was my that was generally my reasoning for not backing it on, when it went through Kickstarter.
Yeah. And next up, I saw this game sitting on the side, and something drew me to it. I don't know what it was, but it's a game called New York Slice, which is all about pizza.
I wonder.
Indeed.
So you went to a specific foodie event and played games about food while eating food.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting that, isn't it?
Yeah.
So New York Slice is quite a good game. I enjoyed this. So basically, you open the box and you're presented with tons of these little slices of pizza, little cardboard slices of pizza. So what you do is, depending on how many players are, you take some of them out of the box, out of the game, because you won't need them.
Yeah.
And what you do is you then divide all these pieces of pizza up into stacks of the same size. I think it's 11. And then there are also bonus tiles you put on top of them as well, which give you things at the end of the game. Like some of the ones were, if you get, there's a day old pizza one, and if you get that, then you lose points at the end of the game. Or there are ones that give you points if you've got the most of a particular type, for example, or if you've collected the most different types. Each of the pizza slices has got a number on, so 7, 6, 4, 9, whatever. So what you're doing is you're trying to collect the sets of the slices. But how it works is one of the players will pick a pile, and then you'll turn that into a pizza on the table. And then what you'll do is you'll split that up into the into sections based on the number of players there are. So the first player for that round does that, and then the next player chooses which of the segments they want. Then the next player does that, and then the first player is left with whatever's left at the end. So you've got an interesting choice. Do you create one slice that's really big, that's got all of the numbers you want in, but you're not going to get first pick of it, so someone else could grab it? So you have to be a little bit tactical with how you split the pizza up to try and get what you want. And also you can put the special marker down on one of the slices as well, and whoever picks that segment up also gets that. And then at the end of the game, the scoring is based on who has the most of each type of pizza. And then you work out the points based on that. So again, because we only played it with two players, it was basically, you'd normally we'd split the pizza just slightly more or less in half, and then to try and like encourage the other person to get that. But obviously if you've got three or four players, it's a bit difficult, because it's much more unlikely that you're going to get at the end of the round what you want. So you have to try and be a bit more tactical. So this is a game I'd really like to play with more players. And it did make me hungry, because it really does look like a lovely pizza.
Well, you were in the right place.
Well, yes. I can't remember if there was any pizza vendors there, though. I don't think there was.
No, sometimes they have them. But obviously, Digbeth Dining Club, they rotate weekly and monthly and yearly. This year, they've had two permanent people.
So that's what we got up to at Digbeth Dining Club. So after that, it was another games night at work. And continuing on the food theme, I bought another game that I had played a couple of times, but Karen hadn't, and that was Burger Up, the game where you are building delicious burgers. So we've gone from pizzas to burgers.
Yummy, yummy, yum.
Yeah, and that's basically, there is a marketplace of ingredients, a selection of different types of burger that you've got to make, and you are drafting the ingredients from the marketplace to build the right burger, be the first person to claim it, get the points, and just carry on until they've all been claimed. And there's not much more to say about that other than it's a game about burgers, and I really like it.
Jolly good.
You've played Burger Up with me, haven't you?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of games we've played together, let's talk about one we've tried to play once and then couldn't get our heads around it. And that is another game we backed very, very early on in our Kickstarter. I don't want to say career, because it's not a career, is it? Kickstarter...
Experience,
yeah, let's go with that. And that is Addictive Alchemy. And this is one of those games where we both own.
Yes.
So I remember, what was it, 2.5 years ago or so? Not long after the new library was built at work. Because I remember we were sitting in the staff room up there trying to play it. And we couldn't get our heads around it, really, could we? We couldn't figure out the different types of card because the backs were all the same. And we had a look at the rules and we found it a bit confusing. And we were already halfway through our lunch break and we were like, this isn't going to happen. So I thought, you know what? I've got more experience in games now than I had then. So hopefully, when I look at it this time, it will make a bit more sense. And it actually did. I managed to split the game up into its various decks. I think that was the thing we struggled the most with. The instructions don't specifically say these are this type of cards are the ones that have got this on. Mm-hmm. So I literally had to get all the cards out. And luckily there was no time limit. So, you know, it's not like I only had an hour to do it in. So I was able to get them all out, came to how many different types there were of each one. And so I was like, okay, those are the, I think they're called Master Alchemist cards or something, that are only needed for the single player game. So I can discard all those and put them back in the box and work it all out. So effectively the way the game this works is you can have up to 6 players, but everyone starts with an identical deck. And it starts off like a deck builder in that you shuffle your deck, put it down, draw however many cards, and you keep working through them. If on your turn, what you're doing is you are playing the ingredients from your hand, well, potions they're called. You drink 2 of them, which is putting them on the table in front of you. Do what they say, which generally has positive effects, allows you to force players to do something or gives you a positive effect. And then at the start of your next turn, you look at the 2 colours of those potions and you do what's effectively side effects of those potions. So there are 6 side effect cards on the table with all the various combinations of colours. So if you've got like a blue and a red one, you'll look at the side effect cards that has blue and red and you do what that says. And what happens is as the game goes on, it's the reverse of a deck builder. You are thinning your deck down, but you don't want to be you want to be the person at the end left with a deck. As soon as your deck is empty, you're out of the game. So they call it a deck destruction game rather than a deck building game. So once I figured out what the various cards were, mechanically it then all fell into place and it was quite enjoyable. And again, I want to play it with more players because with 2 players, this kind of game is like, okay, well, I'm going to attack you. I'm going to attack you. I'm going to attack you. And it just keeps going backwards and forwards. With more than 2 players, you obviously then get to spread it around a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is a lot more fun, I think. So that's Addictive Alchemy. And then just a couple of days ago, we played a couple of other games. So Fishy Tactics, first of all, which is a game from Toby and Mushroom Gaming Company, who, if long-time listeners will cast their mind back a couple of years, we interviewed him on the podcast when this his Kickstarter was in progress. And it's just a nice, simple game where you are rolling a dice, moving fish around a little playmat, and trying to get the fish to your boat. before they can be eaten by a crocodile. However, yeah. I've lost the dice.
Oh, no.
I know. So I was like, oh, no, I've lost the dice. How am I going to play this game? But looking on the website and figuring it out from various pictures, it's just a standard D6. And the 6 has been replaced by a fish.
Uh-huh.
And it, when you roll a 6, you, instead of like moving one of the fish on the board, you steal the fish from someone else. So it was basically, okay, we know then if we roll a 6, then that's what happens. But I didn't have a die with me. So what we did was we used Google. And I just Googled for dice roller because I thought there'd be a website somewhere that's got a dice roller built in. There's actually one built into Google. As soon as you Google dice roller, yeah. One comes up. That's amazing. I had no idea.
Yeah. Harry found this out at our last D&D.
Yeah.
And you can like roll any number of different types of dice and then keep track of which ones are where. And I think Harry just basically started hitting things to try and make it crash. And I think he managed to spawn about 30 dice and it still didn't crash. So yeah. That's cool. Quite fun.
Yeah. Then we played and yet another game from long, long ago, 2016, this one. And this is a game I've never even attempted to play. And this was Dark Dealings, which is a small card game where you are playing a like tyrant, an overlord of evil in his tower. And the villagers of the local village all come in to attack you and you have to try and fend them off. So it's a bit different to what I expected, actually, mechanically how it works. So you've got two decks. You've got all the villagers or the attackers, heroes, I think they're called in this game. Then you've got all of the traps and spells and things that fight those heroes that are provided to you by the Dark Masters. Ooh.
Ooh.
So the game starts with everyone being dealt a hand of 9 heroes. And there's a drafting phase where you choose 2 of them, put them in front of you. Everyone rotates their hands around. Then you choose 2 more. Everyone rotates their hands around until everyone's got 1 card left, and that, then that last card gets discarded. And all of the villagers have got elements that they're vulnerable to when they're attacking you and you attack them back. They're vulnerable to those things. But also they've got a large number in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
The way that number works is when you've got your hand of 8 heroes, then everyone takes it in turn, choosing heroes to put on the table in front of them face down. They then reveal them, and then in number order, from the highest to the lowest, people draft defences from the defence deck. So there'll be a number of them on the table, and people then start drafting them. So what you're trying to do is, you're obviously trying to... The way the game explains it is that the more powerful heroes that you're defending against, the Dark Masters then give you first pick of the things because they're impressed that you've managed to entice those heroes to attack you.
Right.
So once everyone's got all of their heroes out on the table, that they've revealed them all and they've drafted all of their defences, what you do is then you take it in turns going around the table, each revealing a hero and trying to defend against it by revealing defences that have a high enough number to defeat it based on the vulnerability it's got. So if something's vulnerable to fire and it's got a defence of 4, then you need 5 fire to defeat it, basically. But you can only use your defense cards once in most cases. Some of them you can turn them round clockwise to give them an extra go. But then once all the dead goes are done, then you get rid of that card. So it keeps going around where everyone will defeat one hero at a time. But eventually one person will end up not being able to defeat themselves against a hero. That person is then out. And then it carries on going until there's only one person left and that person is the winner. So that's basically Dark Dealings. We only managed, I think I managed to defend myself against 4 heroes and then ended up getting knocked out while Karen was still alive. So therefore, by default, she was the winner because it was only the 2 of us. But obviously, it's one of those games where if someone's really unlucky and they get knocked out early, they're just going to have to sit there and wait for everyone else to finish playing.
Mm.
Which I don't really like that much. But I thought mechanically the game was quite interesting, and it was certainly... I'm sort of annoyed with myself that I haven't played it before now, because I think that it's something that I've seen in other games, but with a nice unique twist to it.
Yeah.
So I liked it. I don't regret having it in my collection, but I've got a feeling if I was to play it with more than just me and Karen or me and you or whoever played it, then it's one of those things where someone could end up getting left out, and I don't like that.
Yeah.
And last of all, I played Ticket to Ride London, of which I can't really say much about. Everyone listening to this hopefully knows Ticket to Ride. And this is the only real difference between this and standard Ticket to Ride is it's got a smaller board, so the game's a lot quicker to play. I think there are less buses in this than there are trains in standard Ticket to Ride. Everything else is the same. Destinations, you know, if you link two up and you've got that card, you get the points for it. But the other thing that there is, which I haven't seen in any of the other variants, but I've only played a couple, is that there's this thing called District, where there are, for example, three stations with the number two on them. And if you link all of those together, then you get two board points at the end. So if you link every station in District with every other station, you get bonuses at the end as well. So you've not only got to do your destinations, you've also got to you also can try and do these districts to get more points as well. So, but I think that took us like 15 minutes to play, so it's certainly a lot quicker than standard Ticket to Ride, and just as enjoyable, I found. That is everything I've played in the last month, I think. I did have a brief game of Star Trek Catan at the Star Trek convention a couple of weeks ago, but we didn't play a full game. But it's just Catan, basically, but set in space with Star Trek things. So, Ray, that's everything I've been playing. What have you been up to?
Not a lot.
Oh.
I've been playing Pokemon Go. Technically, we're not supposed to talk about.
No.
Because it requires the interwebs. But I have... I mean, aside from Cats Are Cute on the mobile app, I've also been playing Wordscapes and Word Cookies.
Now, Wordscapes I've got, and I actually got that last year. My sister recommended it to me as a game to like help me when I was going through my anxiety stuff, because she said it helps take your mind off things.
Yeah, I find it quite difficult once I get going to stop. And even when I'm like falling asleep and my brain is clearly not working and I can't think of like the really obvious three-letter word that it turns out to be.
Yeah.
I'm happy to keep saying to myself, right, just leave it, come back to it tomorrow when you're not so tired.
Yeah.
Kind of the same with Word Cookies. Word Cookies, it has a wheel. And whereas Wordscapes, you're kind of putting them and they kind of go into like a crossword puzzle type grid. Word Cookies is just lists. And it had some fun Halloween themed cookie art when I downloaded it. I was like, oh, let's try that one as well. But equally, both frustrate the hell out of me when I'm sitting there going, but what is, why can't I think of three letter words? And then occasionally there'll be words in there and it's like, nope, that's a bonus word. I'm like, I don't want a bonus word.
Yeah.
I want to fill in the word on the screen. Why are you doing this to me? So I get quite competitive with myself and the app with them, which is a bit silly because it's just a little word game.
It is. It's amazing how you can get invested in these little things, though.
Oh, yeah, I know. And I can't remember which one it is, but one of them seems to like go to an ad after literally every single level. Which, when I was trying to listen to a podcast and play the game, was really frustrating because every time it went to an ad, it muted the podcast to play the ad.
Yeah.
And Scouts just jumped on the table.
Hmm.
So you might hear some purring in the background.
That's all right. A bit of ASMR for our listeners.
Yeah. As long as he doesn't knock everything over. Which is entirely possible, isn't it, Mister? Yes, so as I was saying, every time I every time I finished a level and an ad came on, it would mute the podcast that I was listening to just to play the ad, and then it wouldn't necessarily automatically unmute the podcast and play it again because it paused it. So it paused it so it could play the ads, and it wouldn't necessarily automatically play them again. So I kept having to go out of the app to keep hitting play on the podcast. So I was sitting there going, oh, this is really frustrating. I don't know whether I want to actually buy a mobile game. And I was like, no, we must not buy mobile games.
No.
No.
Don't encourage their behaviour.
No. Don't want to reward them for their poor behaviour of messing with my podcast listening.
Yeah, although, you know, arguably by actually playing it, you're rewarding them because they're getting ad revenue, so.
True. But it's mostly just advertising
other
for
games.
Yeah, but it's one particular type of, it's I think it's Homescapes/Gardenscapes/whatever, and it's the one where there's two characters and they get put into situations and you get the option of giving them three different items to save them.
Right.
And I've seen the advert so many times, I'm like, I don't care if you get drowned in an elevator somehow. Like, why would this be a thing? But alas, that is the pain of free mobile games. So no, I haven't really been playing or buying anything recently. Chris and I did get some magic cards at the new set release.
Oh yes, what was that?
It's the Throne of Eldraine, which is a very sort of fairy tale folklore based set. So it's quite cute, and I think it's quite a lot of the art and a lot of the sort of flavour of the cards does well to sort of echo the kind of European folklore, fairy tales, stuff like that. So there's things in there that are obviously like Hansel and Gretel and Goldilocks, and, you know, stuff like that. And then there's things that have, you know, been made up specifically in the world of magic that have then fit into this. And they've also introduced a different type of tiered booster pack now, which is kind of fairly obvious money-making ploy. So I don't know how to feel about it. I haven't bought any of the super expensive booster packs, but whatever. But yeah, I've played a couple of games of tabletop magic, paper magic.
Yeah.
And I've played it online, but obviously we are offline people.
We are.
We are. We are anti-technology. Conversely, despite working in IT.
And currently recording a podcast over the intertubes.
Yes. Don't tell them.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yes, we're definitely in person.
Yes. No, no internet involved in any of this.
Hello, Scout.
Yes. Meow.
Okay. Well then, let's take this opportunity to have our usual wander over into
Kickstarter Corner.
Ah, we've got a jingle now.
Apparently.
So, do a bit of news first. Some people might remember us talking about the game Mob Sitters at the UK Games Expo.
Yes.
We quite enjoyed it, didn't we?
Yeah.
We did. And it launched on Kickstarter a few weeks ago. And they set themselves a goal of £4,000. They were not near the end. They had got £3,800 and they decided to cancel the project.
Interesting.
Yes. It's one of those ones where they say, oh, well, the campaign's not doing as well as we thought it was, and even though we've almost got as much money as we wanted, we're going to cancel it and think about launching it again afterwards. Now, I don't know how I feel about this kind of thing. It's like, if you weren't going to be happy with getting just £4,000, then why did you set £4,000 as your target?
Yeah.
And now there's a balancing act between setting your target too high, because then people look at it and go, well, that's never going to happen. Like, they're not going to set it to 100 grand, are they? Because they're not going to get 100 grand. But, well, they might do. But people are going to look at it and go, well, I'm not backing that because that's not going to hit £100,000. But, I mean, if they wanted to get, like, 10 or 15, then maybe they should have set the target at 10. You know, they might say, oh, yeah, we're not going to get all the stretch goals and things like that. But that shouldn't be your target. Your target is the minimum level that you're happy with, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's how I would think of it.
Yeah. Maybe we're unusual. I don't know.
I don't know. That's like your minimum threshold to actually make the game.
Yeah, that you're happy with.
Or the item, whatever. Yeah. To a standard that you have promised.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And there's probably no doubt that they could make the game at that sort of level, but they obviously want more. So why... Is it deceptive? I don't know. Was it naive? You can't say, can you? But I think, you know, if it was me, and, you know, I look at it, I looked at that and went, okay, well, I've nearly met my funding goal, but I actually thought we'd be doing better.
Mm.
You know, you wouldn't cancel it and then say, okay, I'm going to launch it again in a few months with a higher funding goal in the hopes of doing better. I don't know. I'm not a creator, so it's difficult for me to say, but it just seems a bit weird to me.
It's a little bit suspicious.
Yeah. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, we go from that to a campaign for someone we know quite well. That is being extremely well-funded. And that is Tranquility from our friend Peter at Board Game Hub. And we interviewed Peter and the creator of Tranquility, James, last month. And I'm very, very pleased to say that they're smashing their funding goal. So at the time of recording, so we're recording this, what's the date today? The 7th of November. Their goal was £7,000. They've currently raised just shy of 10,000, and they've got 768 backers, and there are still 24 days to go on the campaign.
Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah, considering each copy of the game is only £12, that is just amazing.
Mm.
Absolutely amazing. Pete, very pleased for you, very proud of you. You've done amazingly well. And James, all credit to you, you've developed a outstandingly wonderful game. So, you know, I'm really happy for you guys. If you want to go back last month, if you're a new listener, and listen to our interview with Pete and James, and then if that sounds fun to you, then go and back it on Kickstarter. You've got just over 3 weeks, I think, by the time you listen to this, to go and back it. So December the 2nd is when it ends. So, yes. But well done, guys. Brilliant.
Yes. Well done. So our new-ish section to Kickstarter Corner. What political satire games are there this month? And this month we have found one. It's not about Brexit, thankfully. Nor is it about the general election over here.
Nope.
Ditto, thankfully. It is probably everybody's second guess. It is about Trump. Trump the game, unprecedented.
Ah.
Kickstart Christmas and turn your kitchen table into Congress.
I mean, I don't want to, but okay.
This is the race to impeach Trump. For 2 to 4 players, outwit your way through Trump cards and Giuliani's lawyer ups with Congress cards and Mueller's exhibits to secure enough votes to impeach the president and make things just better again. Hashtag winning.
Hmm.
And to be fair, this one isn't as, you know, thrown together and terrible as some of the previous ones we've seen.
And they've actually got backers as well.
Yeah, and they've got a playmat with a, well, the box art and the playmat have the same art. And there is a rather disturbing image, cartoon caricature of Trump. I can't tell whether he's wearing a wife beater vest or whether he's just topless. Behind bars, so you can't see the nips.
Yes.
But it's just like, ugh, gross. And how his nose just looks like a tiny, flaccid willy.
I hadn't noticed that. Thanks for pointing that out.
You're welcome. I mean, as I say, it looks like somebody's tried.
Yeah, it's certainly better than a lot of the political satire stuff we see on Kickstarter.
Yeah, so you can get a print and play for $5 Aussie, because it's for some reason being designed in Australia. I guess Trump is any target for the world nowadays.
I mean, I wouldn't back it, but, you know.
No. I mean, they actually look like they've had someone do some attempt at art and a mock-up of a box and a mock-up of a playmat. So it's a lot more put together than some of the other satirical games we've seen recently.
Yeah.
So if you're interested, it's got until Saturday the 30th of November. And as I say, it's in Aussie dollars, and they estimate delivery in December 2019, which I think is possibly a little bit optimistic.
Mm.
If they're not finishing the campaign until the 30th of November, they have to then make it and ship it around the world from Australia, which takes weeks. Potentially. Mm. But hey. Yeah.
This is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah. You can also go to trumpthegame.com.
Oh, I'm surprised they managed to get that.
Well, let's see if it's actually their game and not just...
It is.
Oh, no, it is.
There's a rule. Oh, it's got that lovely picture as the background of the website. Right, there you go.
Yeah.
And you can download a PDF of the rules. So there you go.
There you go. TrumpTheGame.com. So that is, I guess, mercifully, the only political satire game we found this month.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't backed anything.
Okay, I've backed a few bits and bobs.
Yeah, you've backed one thing definitely that I
forgot to.
Yes.
Okay.
Which was Tiny Epic Dinos.
Yes, Tiny Epic Dinosaurs, a worker placement dino game on the go. Plays 1 to 4 dino ranching players in 45 minutes, and it's easy to learn and teach. It's Tiny Epic.
Yeah, it's Tiny Epic, and it's dinosaurs, and there are wooden dino meeples.
There certainly are. And it looks amazing.
Do you even need anything more than that? I saw it, and then I was like, oh, I'll come back to that, but I forgot to click save. And I've just looked in, it finished 2 days ago, so I'm like, damn you!
You'll get to play it, though, don't worry.
I know. But, I mean, what if I just wanted to decorate my house with 60... dinosaur meeples.
You mean 15 stegosauruses, 15 velociraptors, 15 brachiosauruses, and 15 allosauruses.
Yeah, and then 15 unique other dinosaurs.
Yeah, I think those are only in the Kickstarter edition. Oh, no, I don't think they are, actually. And anyway, it's a Tiny Epic game. You know it's going to be available on retail.
Yes. I have signed up for the late pledge.
Oh, okay.
On their website, but it's not open yet, so... But yes... I buggered that one up.
Never mind. What else have I backed? Game of Phones. So, this is quite interesting. It describes itself as a card game where all you need is your smartphone to take on creative and unexpected challenges. So, this is kind of like a light party game. It's not really anything, anything deep or... But it's not like Cards Against Humanity or something like that.
Yeah.
But you've got cards which have got there's 4 different challenge types. So I'll go through some of the examples on the campaign. So there's the like challenge. It says this challenge is all about getting the influencer, who is like the, if you play Cards Against Humanity, like there's a card czar every round. I think the influencer is their version of that.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the influencer to log your response as they pick the winner for that round. So the card will then tell everyone to do something with their phone, and then the influencer chooses the winner. So the examples I've got here is scroll back to show the first photo in your camera roll, or take a photo where you're imitating an emoji face, or show something scary in your camera roll. So you do that thing, show the judge for the round, and then they choose a winner. Very straightforward. Mm. Then you've got the unfollow option, which is for every challenge in this group, every person in the group eliminates someone from the round until one person is left. Don't quite know how that works, but some of the examples are create a horror story using 5 emojis, find a celebrity who is most likely an alien. I mean, that's Tom Cruise, obviously. Do an image search for your first name plus the clown. There's the download category. This is a lightning round where everyone responds quickly to challenges that don't require voting. So everyone does this. So text a selfie to a random number. Whoever gets the first reply from a person wins. The oldest text message thread wins this card, or send a message to a family member. Whoever gets the first reply wins. And then there's the upgrade cards, which are bonuses where everyone completes a fun challenge together. So everyone creates a calendar event for 1 year from today for a reunion of this game. Everyone passes their phones to the left, take a selfie and return the phone. The influencer creates a group message. Starting with the influencer and going clockwise, send one word at a time to tell a story. Go round the group twice. So it's just like little fun mini games that you do with your phone. And to maybe break the ice, get everyone to know each other a little bit, stuff like that. And then there's lots of little mini expansions with special cards that are exclusive to the Kickstarter as well.
Lovely jubbly.
So that was Game of Phones. Missing Persons. Now, this is a game by the people who did Relative Paradox that I talked about earlier. So me seeing this game on Kickstarter and backing it is what made me dig out Relative Paradox and replay it. But effectively, this game is sort of like Love Letter. It's one of those little micro games that's got a series of cards. It describes itself by saying, you take on the role of detectives to solve 5 missing person cases. The game uses elements of cunning, skill and luck to outwit fellow players and end the game with the lowest unsolved case. So instead of, like in Love Letter, where you've got to have the highest one at the end of the game, in this one you've got to have the lowest. So I think that's probably mechanically the game it's most similar to. Shuffle the 18 cards to form a deck. Each player draws 1 card. This is your hand and is kept secret. On your turn, draw the top card and add it to your hand. Then choose one of the 2 cards to discard. So very, very similar to Love Letter. But I like Love Letter and I liked Relative Paradox. So I thought, let's give this a go. And I think it's like the first game this guy's made in a couple of years. I thought I'd give it a try, and it was relatively cheap. So, and last of all, is a game that finished today that I'm amazed you didn't back.
Why is that?
Because it's a Calico, a puzzly tile-laying game of quilts and cats.
I think this is another one where I was like, oh, yeah, that looks cool. Forgot to do the thing.
In this game, players compete to sew the coziest quilt as they collect and place patches of different colours and patterns. Players will choose a personal design to follow while trying to create colour and pattern combinations that are not only aesthetically pleasing, also able to attract the cuddliest cats. It comes with many different cat and pattern goals to mix and match new challenges each and every time you play. There are thousands of unique puzzles. So I think this can be played solo, or it can be played by up to 4 players. Yeah, 1 to 4 players,
yeah.
For up to 30 to 45 minutes. And it just looks so lovely, and the cats look nice and cute while they're just sitting there snuggling up on their little quilts. And you get little cat tokens as well.
Yeah.
So yet another one that I'm sure you'll be playing, won't you, Way, with me?
Yes.
In fact, you'll probably be, as soon as it arrives, you'll be like, Mass, I want to play this game.
Yes, and we'll probably have to deal with cats trying to jump on it as we play it.
It's thematic.
I know. If they go to sleep on it, that would really be thematic.
Mm, yes, they curl up on the game just like the one on the box.
Yeah. Well, I've just checked the notes from last episode, And I have actually backed something.
Oh, have you? What's that then?
I backed Mint Cooperative after we were talking about it. And it's already finished.
Yeah.
And I've already had the, whatchamacallit?
Survey?
Yeah, that thingy. Complete your pledge on Game On Tabletop.
Oh, really? They're using Game On? That's interesting.
Yeah, which was a bit confusing because I clicked on the link that they sent me, but then the link asked me for a password and I was like, I don't have a password.
No.
Although apparently I've been a member for 2 years. So whatever that password was, I can't remember it.
You didn't sign up when we did that thing at the expo where we had to design a game. Maybe you did because I had a little iPad there,
maybe.
Didn't I?
Maybe. Yeah, anyway. So I've filled that in and I did an extra $10 to get Mint Delivery, which is the middle game.
Oh, I was
going to
say, you're
going to
buy the middle game. Well, there you go. You've answered my question.
Yeah. So, not sure when they'll arrive, but I guess doing pledge completions and order details and all that sort of stuff is kind of, you know.
Yeah.
A good sign. And Mintworks was a really good game, so.
It was.
And
it
they're was. Absolutely dinky. So they won't take up too much space.
Well, that is a plus, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, what's arrived? Have you had anything arrive?
Coral Island.
Ooh, from Alicat.
From Alicat Games, yes. It has arrived. I have not opened it. I've been very restrained, despite the fact that there are dice, lots of them, and they're lots of different colours, and I know they're in there, and I just want to, like, make it rain. So I've been very restrained and not opened it. But okay. Speaking of Alicat, you've had something arrive from them as well.
Oh, I have, yes. A little game called, well, not so little game, called Chocolate Factory.
Yum, 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 yum.
Yeah. Again, haven't opened it. We're going to have to do an unboxing session soon, aren't we, so we can open all these lovely new games.
Yeah.
It's a Euro game where you build your factory, upgrade chocolate, and using an actual physical conveyor belt.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, do I know a lot about it? No. What attracted me to it? It's about chocolate, isn't it?
Yeah.
In fact, I think I backed two chocolate games around the same time, didn't I? Because I backed this and Chocolatiers.
Yeah.
And Chocolatiers was the one about just arranging chocolates in a box to make a nice display. And this one's all about production of chocolates and different types of chocolates. So.
Oh, we do like a bit of chocolate.
Oh, yeah. I should have more to say about that once we've played it. What else have I had? Tome of Delving. So that's something I backed a while back, which is like a D&D sort of like campaign book where you note your character stats and everything in there. But it's a full notebook, so there's space for you to draw maps and you've got like inventory pages and things like that. So as soon as I started playing D&D this year, this came up at just the right time. And I actually have got your copy here as well to give you because... I don't know if you remember, we got double rewards from everything.
Yes.
So I got a free copy, which I said I would give to you. So, yes, you're going to get a copy of Tome of Delving. Kill the Unicorns has come. A small game in the sort of Exploding Kittens, what's the word, realm? Is that the word you would use?
Universe? I don't know.
Well, it's not in the universe, it's but I mean the same type of game, I guess.
Theme?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
But it's a blind bidding and collection card game. You play as one of the Queendom's unique characters. Catch as many unicorns as you can, ideally without accidentally capturing a smelly unicorn or a piggy corn. So I don't know if you remember, this is the campaign where they actually made little plush pigs with unicorn horns on.
Yeah.
I didn't back for one of those, though. Maybe I should have done.
I mean, why not?
Yeah, I could have had a piggy corn. Oh, well. Never mind.
Never mind.
And then the last game is one I've just talked about. Because only like a month after I backed Game of Phones, it turned up. And I think that's got to have won the award for fastest ever Kickstarter turnaround. Certainly the fastest I've ever experienced. I can't think of anything else I've backed that's come within a month.
Yeah,
unless
that
you
is...
can think of anything.
I think I had something a while ago that was really fast, but it was... you know, expected to be fast because they'd basically already made it. They just needed to literally hit go.
Was it a game or was it like a pin or something?
I can't remember. I'm sure I've had a very small game that was very quick, or it might have been a deck of cards or something like that.
Yeah.
But I have had something that was very quick turnaround, but it was a couple of years ago now.
Okay. Right, I have talked for an awful lot this episode, so I do not have any ones to watch this month. So, Ray, it is over to you.
Well, I've only picked two, and keeping with the Alley Cat theme...
Oh, yes.
They are putting out Tungaru, which both of us and anybody who's ever backed anything by Alley Cat before will probably have had an email about.
Yep.
It's already smashed its goal. It's still got 21 days to go, and if we have a little look, I'll read you the first little blurby bit. So in the early seafaring days of the Pacific Islands, you will set out to spread your culture across the archipelago of Tungaru. Gather resources, enlist the help of your culture's leaders, and attract nomads to help your culture prosper. And it's 2 to 5 players, 60 to 90 minutes, and it is, as always, EU-friendly, US-friendly, UK-friendly, and Australia-friendly. I noticed that people have now started doing EU-friendly shipping and then UK-friendly shipping. We haven't left yet. Hopefully we won't, but that's a debate for another podcast. So, yes, there are some lovely little sort of totem meeples and some little boats, as well as little tokens for things like fish, your workers, your leaders. Of course, there are different coloured dice involved. It wouldn't be Alley Cat if there weren't dice involved somewhere. Yeah. It is, when I say it's possibly a bit bigger than some of the previous Alley Cat games, because it's got, the box is 30 by 30.
Well, it's probably the same size as Dice Hospital, isn't it?
Yeah. So you have one double-sided game board. You have 5 culture boards, which would be 1 for each player. Obviously, if you're playing up to 5. 25 tarot-sized leader cards. And then you've got custom wooden resources, fish, shells, coconut, and pearls. Settler meeples, dice, markers, trackers, and boats. And then in the deluxe version, you get 40 culture monuments, which are wooden, and 5 boat miniatures. So in the regular version, they're like cardboard flat boats, and your culture markers are just like little wooden cubes. But in the deluxe version, they've got little minis, and you can have some actual boats where you can actually put your dice in the boats, much like Dice Hospital.
Yeah.
And some extra overlay tiles. And also, if you back at the deluxe edition, it automatically comes with an exclusive first player meeple for Dice Hospital for free.
Oh, where's that?
After Kickstarter, it will only be available in limited quantities, direct from Alley Cat.
Yeah, so if you happen to book Cesar at a convention, he might sell you one, basically, is what that means. Yeah.
And they're doing it in both English and German.
Oh, that's
good. So
they're
going to be printing 2 different versions of the game. So, I mean, obviously it's a Euro-style game. There's worker placement, resource management, wooden meeples. Let's face it, everybody loves wooden meeples.
Yeah.
Upgradable wooden extras. Everybody loves upgradable wooden extras. The art's really nice. It's Alley Cat, so, I mean, they are, at least to me and you, they're a proper trustworthy.
They are.
Company.
They've not done anything yet that I don't like.
Yeah, and they haven't done anything where it felt like you were getting
shortchanged.
Yeah. Whereas a couple of newer companies a similar age to Alley Cat, you have.
Yeah.
Mentioning no names, ITB.
I'll tell you what I like about this campaign as well. They've got all of their previous games on it, so I'm guessing that'll be the option to add on afterwards. You can then buy any of the other games, and you won't have to pay for the shipping. It'll all be included in the cost by the looks of it.
Yeah. Although, handily, even though it says shipping will be added after the campaign, they do have a list saying this is what the shipping will be.
Yeah, £3 for the UK.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I've seen games a lot smaller than that. And you know, they're charging the rest of the world $13. I've seen games in lot smaller boxes than that, that a lot of companies charge more for international shipping.
Oh, yeah. Getting to Canada, Australia, and New Zealand for $9 is way better than things that I've had coming from Canada, where I've had to pay way more than the equivalent of $9 to get it in. And the added benefit for our UK listeners is you won't have to pay customs charges.
Hey.
Or Royal Mail charges for processing your customs charges.
Double whey.
Woohoo! Double whammy. It's already over £25,000 funded. They only asked for £9,500. And yeah, as I say, they've got 3 weeks left, so I think that's going to do really well.
Yeah.
And then I think maybe there is like another sort of secondary theme to the cat theme coming out in some of my things that I'm attracted to.
Mm.
Because I can't remember how many bee-related games I went and got distracted by at UKGE, but there was definitely a couple.
Yeah.
And now my next one to watch is called Honeybuzz, which is the worker bee placement game. Build your hive, make some honey, and sell it at the market in this sweet little strategy game.
Now, I'm surprised that's not been done before, because worker placement, worker bees, natural fit.
Yeah. So the idea is the bees have discovered economics. Can you make the best honey for this bear market? As in, grrr, bears.
Oh, okay.
Not empty.
Yes.
So, it is a worker bee placement game where you expand your hive, forage for nectar and pollen, make different varieties of honey, and sell your honey at the market to bears and other critters.
Mm.
There's only so much nectar to go around, finding the right combinations to fulfill the woodland creature's wants, as well as the queen's orders, will keep you buzzing. So it's worker placement, but also tile placement to expand your beehive. And it also looks like a bit of recipe building. So you have to get the right flavour of honey and then the right ingredients to then combo it to what the people in the market want to buy. So, yeah, you've got order cards. I call it recipes, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Your order cards where there is a recipe, so the badger likes the pink honey, the clear honey, and the yellow honey mixed together. So you've got to go to the right flowers that give you the pink honey, the clear honey, and the really yellowy honey to then gather that up to make that, to fulfill that order for the badgers. And that will give you 10 coins or 10. I can't tell whether it's 10 coins, but I imagine it is because there's also 60 coin tokens.
Right, okay.
And the coin tokens are really brilliantly designed because they're not just boring, round human money. They're woodland themed. So for the one, it's a leaf that's green.
Yeah.
For the five, it's an acorn. For the 10, it's a feather. And for the 25, it's a bear paw print.
Oh, wow. And you can upgrade them to wooden ones as well. They look really nice.
And you've got squishy honey tokens. So I'm interested about that. Squishy tokens is possibly Like wooden tokens or squishy tokens? Hmm. Now you've got me thinking. And then inside of all this, you also have like mini competitions. So you'll get Queen's Contest cards. So who collected the most nectar? Who collected three different types of nectar first, second and third? So you get extra points that way as well. You have configuration cards, so you have to build your, place your tiles to build your hive in a certain shape. And yeah, I think there's quite a lot of depth for what seems like, oh, it's you know, bees.
Mm.
I think there's quite a lot of depth to it.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Considering there's quite a lot in there, it's $39 for the basic.
Yeah.
And $59 for deluxe.
But you still have to pay an extra 20 if you want the wooden coins, don't you? Yeah, they're not part of the deluxe. So. The deluxe version, you get a better box, unique interior liner. You get deluxe nectar tiles, wooden fan tokens, custom resin pollen, foraging beeples, and a wooden honey dipper. But then it says add-ons, $20 deluxe wooden coins. So if you want everything upgraded yeah. and wooden, then you're talking $79. But that's what, 60 quid? 55, yeah. 60 quid? Probably worth it.
I mean, you can, in theory, get the standard version, but then pay the add-on for the coins and just get the coins upgraded as opposed to getting the deluxe.
Yeah, but why would you do that? You'd want everything, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, the deluxe version will have backers' names printed on it.
Yeah.
But then if it's only the deluxe version, then only deluxe people will see your name.
That's true.
As opposed to, like, everybody. I suppose it depends how much you want credit for backing stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does look really good so far, and they have already unlocked some of their stretch goals. So there's an extra 3 configuration cards, an upgrade to drone meeples or beeples.
Mm-hmm.
There's an art upgrade already. And the last one, they've only got one left at the moment. They might add some more. Is multicolored pollen.
Oh.
So let me just turn it back to dollars. So they were after $15,000. They've already got 31,000. So they're already 208% funded, and they too have nearly 3 weeks to go. They've got 20 days left to go, so they finish on the 28th of November. But for the UK, it would be at 2 a.m. on the 28th of November. So effectively, you want to be looking at the 27th.
Yeah.
Which is, it's just under 3 weeks.
But why wait till the last minute?
Indeed.
If you like the look of it, then back it now.
Yes. And it's, well, it says estimated delivery July 2020.
Okay.
And I can't believe it is 2020 in
2 months.
Next year, less than 2 months.
Yep.
And also on that note, I can't believe the time's 32 next month.
I mean, yes, and I'm 40 next year, so there you go.
There you go.
Well, on that depressing note, let's wrap things up. Everyone should know how to get in contact with us. We're on all the social medias at TogCast, TogCast.
If you want to listen to us, you can search for us on your podcast platform of choice, now including Spotify.
Yay.
Or you can go direct to soundcloud.com/offlinegamer.
You can go to our website, offlinegamer.co.uk, where you'll find all of our stuff, our past episodes, and also our YouTube videos, because that's the best place to find it. Unless you want to go to youtube.com/channel/a-bunch-of-random-numbers and letters, because we're not big enough to get a custom URL. Thanks, YouTube.
Boo. And of course, as always, if you have any feedback, questions, suggestions, random tales of board gaming success and or woe, please do email us on offlinegamerpodcast@gmail.com, or you can use the contact form on our site.
So that's it for another episode, and I guess we'll see everyone in December for our annual What We Want for Christmas episode.
Woo!
Because it's nearly Christmas.
Yeah! And birthdays. Woo!
Oh, yes, for you, yes.
Yes. It's quite a few birthdays in December in my family, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And of course, you can always tell us what you guys want for Christmas.
Yes.
With all the things we just told you on how to contact us. So do that.
Please. Please do. Talk to us.
We're not desperate. On that note.
Yes.
We shall bid you adieu for another month.
Yes. See you next month. Bye.